Once again, interesting personal note. I
see what it is on the desk with you. This is what Putin's working out. Supposedly. Take it up with you.
In 1955, I was a student at East Roanoke High School in Roanoke, New Jersey, and my homeroom teacher was a man named Henry Elstelsky. You don't know about him. He was elected to Congress, and he served in a committee in the House that dealt with private bills regarding citizenship. Now, back in those days, we had strict laws on citizens, people coming in from outside the country, and it was well known that if you had money, you could go to a committee in the House and get yourself citizenship through a private bill. All private bills were passed as a matter of courtesy. What Henry did was he industrialized the process of selling citizenship. He went from being a sideline to industrializing it, okay? And people in Washington, in Congress, were so outraged about people profiting off of wealthy foreigners coming in and buying citizenship. The net result of that was the 1965 Immigration Act. Now, had I known that in 1955, he was at high school, he was my homeroom teacher, I could have taken history into my own hands. You know, it's like those people tell, well, if you knew Hitler when he was a little boy. Okay? But I didn't do anything. Okay? Now, I take full responsibility for my inaction. How did I know? Okay, our final speaker is a man who you know, who's going to be talking about abolishing people. Peter Brimelow, British-born financial journalist, founder of VDare, which I read, and author of several books, including Alienation, Common Sense About America's Immigration Disaster in 1995, among the most widely read books on immigration. His examination of ethnic cleavages in Canada and their use as a political football, The Patriot Game, 1986, may be nearly as famous as his work on American immigration. I'm sure many of you have seen him before. He's always worth listening to, so I give you Peter Brimelow.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to, Paul, record myself, so please don't throw me out. Thanks very much. How long have I got, though?
20 minutes.
Right. So I want to thank Paul and Mary Godfrey for putting this conference on, more of an achievement than you may realize. I'll come to that in a minute. And I also want to commiserate with my fellow panel members for not being able to go into the White House because they sat on a panel with me. Some of you may not know the story Paul was alluding to in his talk last night. A couple of years ago, was it 1 year ago, I forget now, there was a young academic called Darren Beatty who was on the platform with me. And when it was discovered that he was working in the White House, there was one of these 5 minutes hates that the mainstream media specialized in. And he was fired because he was on the same platform as me. Now, my views on immigration have not changed. They've not changed for a long time, but they've been public since 1992, when I wrote a big cover story for National Review, incredibly, called Time to Rethink Immigration. And that was ultimately grew into my book, Alienation. What's happened is it's just become more difficult to express them. They've become more toxic, despite the fact, or in fact, because of the fact, that they have elected an insurrectionary president in the form of Donald Trump, whose statement on immigration in August of 2015 was perfect with regard to the perfect statement. It said all things, including birthright citizenship, which we've been saying for nearly 20 years. So the general title of this panel is The Limits of American democratic pluralism, and I'm here to tell you that those limits have now been reached. We're at the limit. Since Trump was elected, there's been a more or less unreported reign of terror right across the alternative right, what John Derbyshire calls the dissident right, driven by cultural Marxists in a weird alliance with corporate America. Carl Horowitz gave a talk about this a couple of years ago. And it's resulted in massive deplatforming And that means the president is going into this election at a significant disadvantage in the situation that he was in 2016, because he doesn't have this guerrilla army of internet supporters to the same extent that he did then. For example, in 2016, we got vdare.com got significant traffic from Facebook. We don't get any at all now. That's not unique to us. It's come right across the system. But it does mean that it's more difficult to get views, for example, on birthright citizenship, which has been a well-discussed and well-ventilated issue on the distant right for many years, out in the face of mainstream media propaganda. Another aspect of this, by the way, which is what our late friend Sam Francis used to call anarcho-tyranny. It's an alliance between anarchists on the street and enforcers and law enforcement. For example, the several hundred people who were arrested for felony rioting at the time of the president's inauguration have all been let go. But on the other hand, there's a complete unequal justice in Charlottesville, and in the Charlottesville, the Unite the Right rally. And people who were simply defending themselves are going to jail, and the people who attacked them are being let off. So we've reached the limits of American pluralism. And one aspect of that, by the way, which as an announcement I can make, I guess, we haven't announced it publicly yet, but VDare.com's conference, which was going to be in November, the Hilton in New York, has been cancelled. The hotel has cancelled us. Now, this is the sixth conference that we've had cancelled in 18 months. I have to say that it's not institutionally damaging to us. These hotels are bound by contract, and they have to hold us harmless if they break that contract. So it's not institutionally damaging to us. But of course, it does mean that the president's policy on immigration can't be discussed in the president's city. And that's a really amazing development, which of course you're not going to hear about in the mainstream media or even in conservative ink media. Now, my particular topic that I was given today is changing demographics. You're all familiar with what's going on here. Basically, after 1965, the American elite, ruling class, decided to elect a new people. And if this continues, whites in America will go into a minority sometime around 2040. I used to say that I won't be here, but our children will be here. And I have a three-year-old child, daughter. But Lydia's banned me from saying that. She says I've got to be there. I'll be 93, but I'll do my best. The Democrats thought in 2016 that they were on the verge of total victory. They were going to win the election. Hillary was going to go full Merkel. They were going to import 200,000 Muslim refugees a year. They were going to abandon enforcement on the southern border. They were going to amnesty the God knows how many, 10, 20 million illegal aliens who are here already. That's what they want to do, and that's what they will do if they get their hands on power again. But they're well on the way to doing this. But there are paradoxical effects of the way this is working. And we'll see them in the short term, in the medium term, for the next several election cycles. What's happening is that America is coming apart demographically. There's a bipolar distribution. There are actually two nations now within the bosom of one state, to quote Lord Durham's report that Wayne and I know about because we know about Canadian history. GOP, or as I call it, GAP, the Generic American Party, because it's done nothing to deserve this, is basically the white party in America. Over 90% of its support comes from white America. The Democrats are basically the minority party. They're a party of coalition minorities with a couple of subgroups of whites in there, which I'll discuss in a moment. I call these two parties, they don't look anything like each other. I mean, people say this when they go to the conventions. Good morning, John. They just have nothing in common.
Good morning.
Yes, cousin. Some of you may know that John just did his 23andMe analysis, and it revealed the fact, the amazing fact, that he and I are somewhere between third and fifth cousins. We come from the same area of the north of England. As I say, I call these two parties America and anti-America, a pleasing coincidence. And we saw in the 2016 election, if you look at it in this slide, a very remarkable development. The minority vote, the share of the Democrat presidential vote that's cast by minorities has been rising very dramatically, and it rose even under Hillary, even though she didn't do that well with blacks, she was so much worse than with whites. 45% of her vote was non-white. This is a party which as recently as 64 captured a majority of white votes in America. Ed Rubenstein did an analysis for me on vdare.com, and we factored in the two of the significant white subgroups in the US, namely Jews and homosexuals, who vote for Democrats by a factor of 80%, despite Trump having Jewish family members and despite him not engaging with the gay marriage issue and flying the gay flag and all that kind of thing. It's done him no good at all. About 52%, somewhere between 52 to 53% of the Democrat vote was cast by what we might call non-generic Americans. And what this means is that the Democratic Party is tipping like a housing project. There's a movement of whites out of the Democratic Party, which is quite spontaneous. As I say, it's not really anything to do with anything the Republican Party has actually done, because it's not actually done anything. It just is. It's an implicit, what Kevin McDonald calls an implicit community, like NASCAR, that whites just flock to without really knowing why they're flocking to it. And this is having a very interesting effect in this election, which apparently Democrats didn't anticipate, which is that these white Democrats are finding that they're getting defeated in the primaries by minority candidates. In New York City and in Massachusetts, two long-established Democratic congressmen fell, even though those left as hell. And of course, in Georgia and Florida, non-white candidates won the gubernatorial and the senatorial nominations against the objections of the party establishment, which didn't want to take this kind of risk. So the parties are polarizing out on racial grounds. There's another aspect of this which I think is significant, a writer we have, Lance Welton, has explored on vdare.com, which is that if you look at these democratic communities, namely minorities, Jews, gays, there's a technical literature on it, and they're systematically more emotional and, in fact, unbalanced, particularly in the case of homosexuals, they're really screwed up, than American than whites are. They're just more prone to psychiatric disorders and more emotional on all kinds of measures. Now, we're not aware of this because our fearless leader, Paul Gottfried, is a model of dispassionate calm and turn the other cheek stoicism. In fact, in every respect, he's been corrupted by these wasps he keeps hanging out with. But it is true. So we know that the Democrats are the party of perjury. They showed that in the Clinton impeachment. Clinton was obviously as guilty as hell of perjury, which is what he was impeached for. He wasn't impeached for having oral sex in the oral office or whatever it is. He was impeached for for perjury, and he was guilty. But they voted for him anyway, so they're the party of perjury. They're also the party of treason. I mean, they're in the process of displacing the American electorate, of inventing, they're literally electing a new people. Which, by the way, is something that's prohibited under the UN Genocide Convention. That's something that's rather difficult to explain away. But we now find that they're also the party of hysterical screeching, because their base group is so emotional. And I think we saw that in the Kavanaugh hearings. The senators, the Democratic senators, simply couldn't restrain themselves. So my advice to America generally is buy earplugs. And of course, stop immigration. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have questions.